back here on Downtown on a Wednesday afternoon. And up next, we are so happy to get on board the telephone line and welcome in one of our favorites on the show. She is a Downtown Hall of Famer, after all. The wonderful Perry Gilpin joins us. Hello there, Perry.
Hi. That is a shout. That little song is kind of a shout out to Susanna Hoffs, whose birthday is today.
Right. Susanna, who, like yourself, defies time, I think is 65 today and looks about 40.
Totally. And she can still play. I've seen her play. And, you know, like, not that she can still play. She still plays. She is such a rock star. She is so fun to watch on stage. She sounds great. She plays great. And she just moves around and has so much fun and does a really great show.
And has a great, I don't know if you got to hear it. She's got a great new album that was produced by a friend of our show, Peter Asher.
Oh, I have met him too. I did not know that. I do know that she has a book that also came out in paperback today, and her book is fantastic. It's a bestseller. She's just like she's a quadruple threat. Like, she can do it all.
Yeah, she sure is. Well, how have you been since last we talked with you?
Good. I've been good. Lots and lots has gone on. everything's okay now.
Oh dear, that's was there some trouble?
No, we just had my mother-in-law was in and out of the hospital for all of the summer.
But oh dear,
he is much better now, and then a couple other things happened that didn't end so well. So it's just been a very, you know, it's just been a time that people go through, right? And then on top of it all were the strikes, but in a way the strikes were as horrible as they were and are still, it was a time I could spend where I needed to be without, there was nothing else happening. So in a way it was, there was that pressure wasn't on, you know, what should I audition for this? Should I meet on that? Should I do this? You know, it's like none of that was in question because nothing was happening.
Well, let's talk about the strike and the agreement that was reached. I mean, it was a long time, and I feel like it went longer than people thought it would go, especially after the writers settled. And you never get everything you want in a contract. But did this provide the protections that actors need, especially in terms of things like AI?
Well, you know, not everyone's never going to be happy. Like, you can't please everyone, and that's a good thing. You know, there are people that have stronger fears about it, because it will affect them more than others. And we all need to be aware of this new thing that's coming into our lives and that we don't necessarily know is coming. So I think it also raised awareness about AI and how it will, you know, and raised questions about how it will affect us all in journalism and, you know, on television. But specifically with actors, it was, you know, there are huge stars that will always be, you know, people will always want to see them perform. People will always want to see the parts they play and the parts they choose and the movies they do and the TV shows they do. But there are a lot of other members of SAG-AFTRA that are, you know, the actors that work every day whose names you might not know. You might recognize them, you might not. And then there are people that also make a living in the background, you know, doing background work. And all of a lot of the people that do the background work were sort of being asked, the way I understand it, and I may have this wrong. So I just think they were sort of being asked to be scanned. And then their image could be used in the background of anything. So we're going to pay you this much money for your body, picture of your body that we're going to just put in anywhere we need it, and you're done, you know. And that takes away an entire career from somebody or an entire livelihood from someone, you know. But then where does that stop? Where do the rules apply that say you can't use that image anymore, you need to find another one, or any of that? It's just sort of dealing with modern technology, what's coming, what's changing, and how are we going to protect ourselves and each other. And I think it also kind of was a big red flag for Biden and our Congress, you know, to start thinking about how it's going to affect everything, you know, and try to get a handle on it, try to talk about how it's going to be regulated, if it's going to be regulated, you know. And at the same time as the guy that kind of invented AI quit Google and went around and spoke to people, there was a great 60 Minutes and several other ways. I think he did a TED Talk and just kind of said what he felt like, you know, were the dangers. And just being really aware of it and seeing how it kind of stopped work and everything, not that anybody wanted to stop work. It's just it brought it to the surface. So that might be a good thing.
Well, yeah. Plus, not to mention the way people were being compensated for work that went to streaming services, where, you know, people were making next to nothing for shows that were airing repeatedly on Netflix and other services.
Yeah, that the whole business model had changed, and it had changed a lot already, and people were sort of dealing with it. And of course, people can always negotiate whatever they want to negotiate and decide if they want to do something based on what they're being offered or what they can negotiate. But the thing was that changing the business model so much for Netflix kind of inspired everyone to want to change their business model. And it was getting, you know, it was sort of topping Netflix, you know, getting even more just different. And that people had, you know, the writer's strike was started because the lower level writers or the younger writers could not get the experience they needed to move on. You know, they were kind of turning in 10, let's just say it was a 10 episode short series. What am I saying? Limited series. And they'd turn in 10 scripts before shooting even began. And then they'd retain maybe one or two writers. And so, in other words, the way it's always been, where writers can, you know, start to see how actors play a role and say, oh, okay, well, this would work a little better if we tweaked it here, or, you know, this woman is really, really good at this, but she's not as good as that. Let's go in that direction so that we can get the most out of this character and most out of this story. And it's just, they're there to shepherd the project, and they weren't even there anymore, you know? So that also wipes out a living for a whole group of people that can't be on set, watch how actors work, watch how directors work with that, watch how their script turns into a show, you know, and then have that experience as they go to their next job and say, okay, well, I'm not going to write that anymore because that's really expensive and it doesn't go well, so I learned my lesson. Do you know what I mean? You just didn't get training.
Right. Well, and I think of the stories you've told us about Frasier and the feedback that the cast would give to the writers, and that you'd have that give and take, which made the writing that much better.
Yeah. In my opinion, it did, because there was, you know, everyone listened to each other with kindness. You know, it's like, it wasn't like I may not be doing this right, but I just have a question. And also, you can think, if the actors got that question, the audience might have that question.
Right.
So let's address it.
We're talking with Perry Gilpin here on Downtown. Well, it was so wonderful to see you back in the finale of the Frasier reboot, bringing back Roz Doyle. What was that whole experience like for you?
Just fantastic. It was so much fun. It really was. It was on the lot. It was fun to just go back to Paramount again. I had worked on one show since, and it's just fun to go back there. I did three series. I worked on the lot for 15 years. So I really didn't even know how much I had missed it. And it was just great to just be on that lot, walk around. It was great to be on the set. It was fun to watch Kelsey direct. He's really good at it, and I was really happy that I got to be in one that he directed. Although I love working with Demi, and I love working with other directors, it's fun to watch him because he has such command of the character, but also, you know, how he wants to tell the character's story. So it was fun, and the rest of the new cast is fantastic. They're kind and really good and working hard, and you know, it was just funny. It was just sort of like an alternate universe.
Well, I enjoyed the series. I thought he is Frasier, so obviously that's not a challenge. But I guess I like the fact that trying to take it in a new direction, but at the same time honoring the past of the tributes to John Mahoney in the early part of the series. I thought it was very well done. But you know, we were talking about streaming in this streaming world. You never know, because some of those streamers seem to value new shows over keeping something around for a while.
Yeah. It's really hard to tell. It's hard to tell what's going on. I haven't heard anything. You know, I don't think anybody's heard anything about whether it's going to do a second season. And I just think those decisions are being made right now, and I have no idea.
By the way,
I think Yellowstone has gone for many, many seasons, and didn't it start out as a streamer?
It sure did. Yeah, it was on, I think, on Paramount.
Right. So it's like, you know, I think there's no way to know.
No. I want to thank you again for getting us together with your friend Siobhan Fallon Hogan. She was on with us a couple of weeks ago. Her new movie is so good, Shelter and Solitude, and that woman is an absolute hoot. I love talking to her.
I know. I'm so glad. I was so glad to see that. I told her to give you a call. And I'm glad she did.
Yeah, me too. She was great, and the movie is so good, and she's got it figured out there, doing her own thing and getting the family involved as well. It was great.
It is really funny. It's so good. Her kids, because I did a play with her years ago before she got married and before either one of us had a family on our minds at all. And she, you know, she kind of disappeared for a while she raised her kids, and then she just came blazing back with these great things that she's writing and producing, and she's got her kids working on them. And when I did the first one she did, which was called Rushed, which is also really good, and she had all of her friends. I mean, everybody on the set was a friend or a relative of hers, just really working hard. And it was all good. It was really, really good.
How are your two college students doing?
They're good. They're great. They're enjoying themselves. We went up to see one on Sunday, and we were hoping to see the other one because we knew she was in the neighborhood at a Frisbee tournament. And we got a phone call, and we looked over, and our daughter was like, look to your right. And she was like going down, you know, on the freeway next to us in the back seat of a car. But they had to go like 5 more hours, so they didn't stop or anything. We were just waving to our kid in the back seat of somebody else's car. It was really a moment, but we were all laughing and taking pictures of each other. It was very funny.
I saw you posted some wonderful artwork from your husband Christian. Did he have a showing recently? Because it's some phenomenal works.
He has a pop-up this Saturday that's going to open this Saturday night, and then it'll be up for a couple of maybe like a month or so here in LA, and just in a space that isn't always a gallery, but it might be from now on. But it's his gallery in New York has a little space here, and so it's this Saturday, and he's so excited to do this here where we live, and you know, his work is beautiful, and I think it'll be fun.
So what's up for you? Have you got any more projects in the near future?
No, I don't know. I don't know. Everything that I was working on went into either ended or kind of went into a different phase during the strikes. So I don't know. We're just kind of figuring it out. And nothing, there's not a lot going on yet that I know of.
Because I would think people would see you on Frasier and say, damn, that Perry Gilpin is still great. We got to get her in our film, in our TV show, yeah. Whatever it might be.
I know. You would think.
Have them call me. I'll straighten them up, for crying out loud.
Okay. All right. I will.
Have you been thinking at all or trying not to think about the election coming up later this year?
Oh, of course I'm thinking about it. There's no way not to think about it. You know, but it's interesting. I think it's not everyone's happy with how things are being covered, but it does feel like things are really being covered. There's a lot, like you can't escape that there will be an election in a year, you know, which is good.
It is, but I feel like I've got PTSD. Every time I see the big orange guy on TV, I start to get a little twitch in my eye.
It's diabolical. It's something that I never thought I would ever see as a child. And I have been saying that for about 6 years now, but I just never thought I would see what's happening here happening.
Yeah, and I don't know how do you? I don't want to step on any toes here, but we all have to encounter people in whatever work we do, wherever we go, who believe in whatever he's selling out there. And I don't know. I've lost the ability to be able to talk to those people. I don't know what to say to them.
Well, it's not just that. It's also getting into huge arguments with dear friends over things you think are obvious.
Right.
But also saying one thing now means that you're saying 10 other things that you didn't ever mean to say or even think of. You know, so much has been, social media in a way, just this kind of, this word is being so overused, but it's the right, someone has figured out how to weaponize a point of view, you know, and that your point of view means you're this, this, and this.
Right.
And I am going, wait, I just said this. Why do you think I think those things too? And then I realized, well, if that's happening to me, you know, maybe I'm doing that to other people, either I'm saying it or thinking it. And it's just a really confusing time. And it doesn't feel like you can peacefully have discussions right now. But it feels like a lot of people are trying.
And I hope so. But I think, you know, we were all raised to be respectful of other people's opinions and treat people the way you want to be treated. And that, I feel like that's been devalued in the last several years.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yes, I agree. But you just have to keep trying, you know, you just have to keep trying to, I mean, I have two kids in college, and they're great kids, and they're working hard to build futures for themselves, to learn what they're there to learn, and to have fun, and, you know, to enrich their lives. So I have people telling me, colleges are doing this or that, and I have two kids in college, and that's not what's happening at either of their schools, so or for them. So it's just all of these broad strokes, you know, everyone's talking in such generalizations and broad strokes, and you know, people say don't talk politics or religion, or they used to say it, you know, and then I would always say, why can't you talk about it? That's the most interesting stuff. And now I'm starting to understand why people said don't talk about that, because if now people feel like if they don't agree with you, they can just rip you a new one, you know? And it's like, but wait, I'm allowed to think anything I want and feel, I'm allowed to believe and worship and think and do what I feel is right for me. Why are we arguing about this, you know? But it's good to get past this thing where we're all arguing. That maybe the next step is maybe we can actually talk.
I hope so. I hope people get to the point where they've had enough of the arguments and look to find some common ground somewhere along the way. I saw a piece the other day online I thought was really good that said a lot of this comes down to boredom for people. That, look, by and large, we're safe as a country. You know, we're not being threatened with foreign invasion or anything like that. Regardless of what people think about the economy, overall, we're doing pretty well as a nation, and so people don't have the big things to worry about as much, and so they fixate on these little differences and just, again, fueled by social media, just amp up those differences and talk all about those instead of the vast amount of things that we all have in common and often view the same way.
Yeah, totally agree 100%. And I think that, you know, because there's a lot of things weren't made for a while because of the pandemic. Like, I just mean, like, just entertainment things. Mm. There's a lot of great stuff out there. But, you know, a lot of things weren't made, and a lot of things weren't made during strikes. And so there's not that distraction, you know. But then also, I heard, I love this guy, Governor Tim Walz, W-A-L-Z, from Minnesota.
Mm.
And he was speaking, I think it was either on CNN or MSNBC, but he was talking about the same thing. He goes, you know, the people have been spouting dystopia since 2016, and our youth is, and he was a school teacher. He was very involved in he's an educator, and he's the governor of the state now, and he's amazing. But he was talking about this, this message of dystopia being passed, given to our youth since 2016, and that it's all just smoke and mirrors. And it was very powerful what this guy said. And, you know, and he was very much talking about the good things that are being done that no one's paying attention to now, the policies and the things that are being at least, you know, worked on and introduced and talked about, and bills are being introduced, and whether they pass or not. President can't always get that done if Congress isn't functional. So, you know, there's a lot going on that's being said that's, like, I'm agreeing with you, that is just not true.
Well, and that dystopian message, my experience in working with young people is, they don't want to hear that. You know, they're young people are by nature optimistic. They've got their whole future ahead of them. And when you start preaching doom and gloom, I find they kind of tune that out and say, well, no, I've got some control over my own life, and I choose not to go down that road. And I don't see everything being as bad and gloomy in the end times as you do.
Well, I think maybe not youth, maybe not kids that are teenagers now, but I know a lot of people in their late 20s and early 30s that talk about the end of times a lot. You know what I mean? I have seen that and heard that, and I never did. I never even thought about that. You know, I thought we were past the Cold War and past all, you know, nobody had to have bunkers anymore, you know, because my parents talked about that, but nobody had to have whatever those, you know, wherever you had to go for if the nuclear bomb.
Mm.
Nobody had that. No one had that fear anymore. And so I grew up in a time when everybody felt very free and, you know, very protected, and just everyone went about their lives. And maybe we took our eyes off the ball a little bit. I don't know, because things were so great. But now I feel like people are a lot more afraid of the environmental issues and guns and all kinds of stuff.
Well, there's certainly plenty to be afraid of out there. Well, what are you doing for fun, though? Let's focus on that. Are you watching anything? Seen any good movies or series lately that I should check out?
Yeah, we started The Flight Attendant the other night.
Oh, that's fun. That's very good.
And oh my gosh, I never can do this. I can never. The Crown was amazing. It was so good. Of course, Succession, all the stuff that, you know, I don't know if you watched the Emmys the other night.
I did.
The distribution of Emmys seemed, you know, incredibly right on and fair, and the way, you know, everybody got honored, even though it was kind of strange. Like, I think The Bear.
Oh, The Bear is so great.
Yeah, but that was the first season that got awarded, so they may get some more next year.
Right.
The second season.
Now, I haven't seen Beef. Have you seen that?
I have not seen Beef. I need to see Beef.
Yeah, I think I do, too.
That's the next thing on our list. We just want to finish The Flight Attendant. But isn't that weird to watch it that way? And it's not weird. It's the way it's been for years, but it's like, it's so interesting that you watch something for an extended amount of time knowing that it's going to, you know, you're going to get through that before you go on to the next TV show. Remember when you'd watch, like, you know, asynchronously six shows a night, maybe?
Right, right. And you wouldn't think about them much until the next week rolled around. And you're like, oh, it's Thursday. That show I like is on again.
Yes. And, kids do that kind of block, you know, they do that kind of study now where there's, they just do three subjects a day for longer. So it seems like we're all shifting.
That's for sure. Well, Perry, it is wonderful to talk with you. As always, hope 2024 brings you lots of happiness and joy and good health and all that sort of thing.
I wish the same to you. I wish I was Paula Poundstone. She's funny. She doesn't get so serious. How is she?
How's Paula?
Yeah.
Oh, she's good. We haven't talked to her for a while. I think it was maybe back in the fall is the last time we talked to her. But she's doing well.
Okay. Well, good.
She's busy out there touring. Who did we talk to the other day? Well, because I was a big MASH fan. We talked to Mike Farrell from MASH a couple days ago.
I saw that on Instagram. How's he?
Oh, my goodness. That man, I love him. He's such a nice man and so committed to doing the right thing in his personal life and fighting for causes that he believes in. I have so much respect for him.
Oh, good. And what about Ken Burns? Was he on recently? How's he?
Ken's doing well. He was on in October to talk about his most recent movie, The American Buffalo.
Oh, need to watch that.
Which was so much better. I mean, you knew it was going to be good, but it was such an incredible story about what we did to the buffalo and by extension did to the native peoples who had depended on the buffalo for hundreds of generations. It was, he's great. He's awesome.
Oh, I got to see that.
Yeah, you'll like it. It's very good. Are you still now, you had a project you were working on a while back. I don't know if you can talk about that. Is that still in the works?
Well, there's a couple, but I can't talk about anything yet, but everything's kind of in limbo. Still, but as soon as I can, I will call you.
All right. That sounds good.
Well, thank you for asking.
You bet. Well, we'll get you back before too long, but it's wonderful to catch up with you as always, and we'll talk with you again before too much time has gone by.
Okay.
And if I see Bobby Sherman, I will mention your name.
Oh, please do. Happy New Year, Rich.
Thank you, Perry. Same to you.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Perry Gilpin with us here on